I know when women can compete on an even playing field, we're going to do just fine. But the DACA is stacked against us in so many ways. It's stacked against us in terms of implicit biases, which begin with the toys that we play with and the signals that we get from the people around us. It's peer pressure that encourages young girls to stay away from classes in math and science and technology and engineering, to how we're treated in the workforce. And then the advantages and challenges of just being a woman, and oftentimes, particularly women who go into fields that are male-dominated, will our voices be heard? And I think one of the early lessons that I learned is to not, you know, be my own worst enemy and to learn to share my story.
I'm your host, Michelle King, and you're listening to The Fix, a podcast that shares the stories of women and men who are innovating and taking action to advance equality in the workplace and beyond. Valerie Jarrett served for 8 years as the senior advisor to President Obama. Her book, which came out earlier this year, Finding My Voice, My Journey to the West Wing and Path Forward, recounts Valerie's early life and later experiences working in the White House. Valerie was born in Iran to American parents. Her family moved to Chicago when she was a child, where she grew up and eventually went on to practice law before entering city politics. In 1991, she hired Michelle Obama to work for the city's mayor, and nearly 30 years later, she remains one of their closest political and personal confidants. In addition to advising them, she currently serves as a board member to Lyft and is a distinguished senior fellow at the University of Chicago Law School. In this episode, you'll hear from Valerie, who will share her time in the Obama administration and remarkable journey with finding her voice through her work, which includes ensuring equality for women and girls, advancing civil rights, reforming the criminal justice system, and improving the lives of working families. In 1991, Valerie Jarrett interviewed a promising young lawyer named Michelle Robinson in Chicago city government. At the time, neither of these women knew that it was the first step on a path that would ultimately end up with both of them in the White House. Here, Valerie shares how her journey with the Obamas started.
I started out practicing law at a big corporate law practice, and I can't actually remember why I went there in the first place, other than the law schools make it very easy to do that. I was not enthralled with the practice, to say the very least, and I wasn't even very good at it. And I swerved away from the big corporate law firm into public service, joining the administration of Mayor Harold Washington as a lawyer in his law department. And it is really there that I found my voice. And I started advocating on behalf of the people of Chicago, particularly those who didn't traditionally have a seat at the table. And I learned a lot about public service because our constituents were so proximate to us. And they're, you know, they follow you to the grocery store, and they come upon you when you're playing with your daughter in the park. And it's 24/7, and that's as it should be. From there, I went on to join a Habitat company, which is a real estate development and management company, and was able to continue a lot of the work in Chicago's neighborhoods because we were the receiver for the Chicago Housing Authority. And I found that very fulfilling, and I became the CEO of that company. And I joined a range of both corporate and not-for-profit boards. I was chairman of the board of the University of Chicago Medical Center. I was chairman of the Chicago Stock Exchange. I was vice chairman of the University of Chicago. And as I said, I served on many boards. And I learned how important it was for the corporate community to be civically engaged in Chicago. And I learned a lot about business. And I met the Obamas back in 1991 when I was trying to recruit then Michelle Robinson to come and join me when I was in the mayor's office in Chicago. And in the process of trying to recruit her, she told me her fiancé didn't think it was such a great idea. And so they invited me to dinner to talk about it. And the rest is history.
Valerie soon became Michelle and Barack Obama's trusted personal advisor and family confidant. Eventually, Valerie joined the White House team in 2009 and departed with the first family in 2017. Here, she shares her role as an advisor.
It was terrifying. I woke up every day petrified, given the awesome level of responsibility. Our job was, of course, to give him the best advice we could about every issue that came across his desk. And I was the longest serving one in history, which I still pinch myself to think, but I don't know why anyone would leave short of the full 8 years. And so in addition to the general responsibility of advisor, I also oversaw three offices, the Office of Intergovernmental Affairs, which is responsible for our relationships with all elected officials outside of Washington. So our governors, mayors, city councilmen, state legislators, county board officials, et cetera. And then I also oversaw the Office of Public Engagement, which was the gateway through which the American people could interface with the White House and a broad range of constituencies that represent them. And then finally, I chaired the White House Council on Women and Girls, charged with an all-of-government approach to ensure that we were looking at all of our policies and programs and legislation through a gender lens to try to fight for gender equity.
In April 2019, Valerie launched her book entitled Finding My Voice, My Journey to the West Wing and Path Forward, which details her experience and challenges working as a single mother.
It was important to me, really based on my experience as a young working mom, and both my experience at a corporate law firm where I was one of the few women there and didn't really feel that I had a support network around me, to when I worked in city government where my principal mentor was my client, a woman, an African-American woman, who took me under her wing and enabled me to be the single working mother I needed to be. You know, it was so hard. And I used to sometimes think, well, if I were just smarter, or if I just was better organized or slept fewer hours, more efficient, then maybe it wouldn't be so hard. And I tried to pretend that it wasn't hard. And she got me to open up and talk to her about what the challenges I was going through as a working mom. And she was incredibly supportive of me. And I learned that if I didn't share my story and what I was going through, it would be hard to expect my boss or my employer to give me the support I needed. But the other thing I thought about during those early days was, look, I had a good paying job. I had health insurance. I had a supportive family. I never had to worry about whether or not I had enough money to put food on the table or take care of my daughter. And I felt like I was holding on by my fingertips. And so if I felt that way, well, what about the working family that's, you know, working two jobs, minimum wage, no safety net, worried about their children all the time, trying to figure out how to be good parents when they knew that they had limited resources? And I always said to myself, if I'm ever in the position to fight for those working families, that's what I'm going to want to do.
As part of her work in the White House, Valerie chaired the White House Council on Women and Girls, which advises the United States President on issues relating to the welfare of women and girls. Here, Valerie shares why this work is so important to her.
One of the many challenges that we took on through the White House Council on Women and Girls was how to support working families and then how to help every young girl grow up knowing that her only limitations would be her dreams, and to level the playing field so that we can compete on an even playing field. Because I know when women can compete on an even playing field, we're going to do just fine. But the DACA is stacked against us in so many ways. It's stacked against us in terms of implicit biases, which begin with the toys that we play with and the signals that we get from the people around us. It's peer pressure that encourages young girls to stay away from classes in math and science and technology and engineering, to how we're treated in the workforce. And then the advantages and challenges of just being a woman, and oftentimes, particularly women who go into fields that are male-dominated, will our voices be heard? And I think one of the early lessons that I learned is to not, you know, be my own worst enemy, and to learn to share my story and stop trying to pretend that, you know, I had to go to take my daughter to the pediatrician. I would just make up excuses when, where was I going? I was going to do something that was really important. And having that woman who was a mentor when I finally joined city government, who encouraged me to be open and to help people around me appreciate the challenges of being a working parent. All of that came into play when I was chair of the White House Council on Women and Girls.
During her time overseeing the Council on Women and Girls, Valerie was able to make a meaningful impact. Here she shares some of the achievements and how she's continuing this work now.
President Obama decided to create this council that had representatives from every federal agency, and that's the first time a president has taken that approach. And the reason why is the challenges are ubiquitous and that we need holistic solutions. And so, yes, if a woman has a job, that's great, but if she doesn't have health insurance, then where is she? Or if she doesn't have preventive care covered without a copay, where is she? Or if she wants to start a business, but she doesn't have access to capital, where is she? And so we really challenged every single agency in the federal government to look at what we were doing through a gender lens. And then we formed partnerships throughout the country with the private sector, with academics who do research in this area, with advocates. We focused on how are we treating women on college campuses and created a program called It's On Us, because 1 in 5 women are assaulted, sexually assaulted, while they're in college. Well, that's an epidemic. And so what are the long-term traumatic effects of that? And how can we prevent it from ever happening? And so, again, we looked at every single agency and the issues that that agency could do to improve the lives of women and girls. And it was extraordinarily rewarding. And I'll say, when this new administration discontinued the White House Council on Women and Girls, Tina Chin, who had been my partner in that effort, and I set up a not-for-profit called the United States of Women, and we're continuing that work from outside of government. And, you know, all the really important change happens on the ground. And so we're lifting up those best practices through this new United States of Women and sharing those best practices broadly around the country in the hopes that we can take what works to scale.
Given the title of her book, Finding My Voice, I wanted to understand what this means to Valerie. Here she outlines how she developed the confidence to speak up and share her story.
So I started out painfully shy, and I think didn't really know what my passion was, and I didn't listen to the most important voice, and that's the quiet one inside of each of us. And it wasn't until I was totally miserable in my big law firm in an unhappy marriage that I finally said, wait a minute, this can't possibly be my life. And I might be making everybody else happy, but am I making myself happy? Am I doing something that one day my daughter will look up proud of her mom? In the current situation I was in, she wouldn't be proud of me. And I swerved. Part of my message in my book is that it's okay to swerve. In fact, the adventure of life is in the swerve. And is it terrifying? Yes. But I encourage people to find the courage to swerve out of their comfort zone, whatever that might be, and look for ways where you can feel fulfilled. And to at the end of, you know, the multiple chapters of your life, when you look back, you say, well, I made a difference. And I made a difference in the lives of those I love, and I made a difference in the lives of people who didn't have anyone rooting for them and encouraging them and fighting for them. A lot of times we limit ourselves and we're afraid to take chances. And look, there's sometimes where you can't afford to take a chance. You can't afford to speak up and take the chance of losing your job. But if you are in a position to fight for yourself, do. And if you aren't, then that's when other people's voices come in. And so that's why I considered myself a champion for people who didn't have somebody rooting for them. And I found it easier to use my voice as a force for good for others. But that same mentor that I mentioned earlier in our interview, she also taught me how to be an advocate for myself. And at first it seemed kind of unseemly. And she's like, no, if you don't speak up on your behalf, who's going to? And that's another, I think, growth of development that I experienced once I swerved out of that big corporate practice. I think there's also safety in numbers, and for the women in your listening audience to remember that it's important for us to build relationships for one another and to root for one another and support one another.
Recent research suggests that the widely held idea that women are less confident than men is incorrect. Women are actually just as confident as men, but they're penalized for asserting themselves because they're violating the standards or gender stereotypes that we all hold for how men and women are meant to behave. Valerie shares how each of us can support women to navigate this challenge.
I know in the White House, we had an issue with women's voices kind of shrinking, and our voices became more powerful when two things happened. One, when President Obama said that he would make better decisions if we spoke up. but also when we develop relationships with one another. And when you walk into a meeting and you see somebody on the other side of the table and you've just had dinner with them the night before and you know everything about their family, it just gives you more confidence to speak up. And so I believe diversity is a strength. I believe that decision-making is better, more fruitful when there are people around the table who have different life experiences. And part of what I encourage employers to do is to recognize that and then help support those voices so that they can be heard and valued. Give yourself permission to know it's scary. And just because other people are pretending that they're not scared, they're scared too. And there are no dumb questions. And your perspective is important. And one of the strategies that President Obama used to make sure that our voices were heard was to say, I will make better decisions with the benefit of your input. That was so empowering to the women around. And so I think for those of us who are in leadership positions, we have to recognize that people are hesitant. And there are a lot of people who are as shy as I used to be. Now, of course, you see, I can't stop talking. But there was a time when I really was shy and reserved, and I needed people to coax me out of my comfort zone. And so if we have a voice, let's use it to help empower other people. And that's part of what I find so satisfying today. And I think that employers who understand that are going to have a more vibrant workforce, and therefore they're going to make more informed decisions as they try to compete globally. Women are now half the population. Our voices should not be discounted in the decision-making process.
Finally, given all her achievements, Valerie reflects on the greatest lesson that she's learned throughout her career.
My daughter, who's now 33, when she was 30, she asked me the question, well, what would you tell a 30-year-old Valerie Jarrett? And I thought, well, oh my gosh, I have so much to say that I wish I had known when I was 30. You know, everything from, like, I used to think I was superhuman and I could do everything myself. And when people say, can you have it all? I thought that meant I had to do it all. And so I'd work all day and I'd come home and I'd put Laura to bed and I'd work some more. And then I'd start making baby food from scratch in the middle of the night. And how silly was that? And eventually I realized, oh no, I'm actually not superhuman, when I started dropping balls all over the place. And I used to pretend to myself and to others that I had it all together. And I think I did a disservice to everybody, to me for sure. But also, I'm sure my friends looked at me and they were thinking, well, Valerie seems to have it together. Why is it so hard for me? And so I want young people to tell their story, speak their truth, recognize that the good and the bad that's happened to us is part of what makes us who we are. And I used to shy away from talking about this unusual childhood I had, born in Iran at a time when my father couldn't find a job in the United States as an African-American physician. And so he goes halfway across the world. And he told me later, when he finally did get a job at his dream job in the University of Chicago, that sometimes the shortest distance to where you want to go means you have to be prepared to take the long way around, the scenic route, as he used to call it. And I want people to realize, particularly younger folks who now, everything happens so rapidly and sometimes so easily. And hard things are still hard. And this is a marathon. You got to do what it takes to replenish yourself and become resilient and realize that your failures don't define you. They actually make you smarter. They make you stronger. They help you grow. So that's part of what I wanted to achieve in my book, is to tell my story so that people could be introduced to this young, shy person who is very different than the person I am today, because it shows we all grow.
It was so fascinating to hear from Valerie and to learn about her journey into the White House. It's amazing to think that someone as accomplished as Valerie went through the same challenges that most of us experience with learning how to speak up and believe in ourselves. I also really enjoyed hearing how part of her journey included supporting others to find their voice. If you're interested to learn more about Valerie's experiences during the Obama presidency, then please check out her book, Finding My Voice. Thank you so much for tuning into our episode today. If you're interested in partnering with us or being featured as a guest on the show, then please reach out through our website, thefixpodcast.org. You can also sign up to our weekly newsletter and contribute your story there. Thanks again, and I'll catch you all on the next episode.
This show is produced by Human Group Media, an award-winning social good podcast company. Human Group Media works with thought leaders, brands, and organizations to inspire social change through the power of audio storytelling.